Hello, I'm Carol.
Hello, I'm Susan. Welcome to Kickapoo Nightlife, a news magazine exploring our world after sunset. We'll explore how dark nights and dark skies affect human health, as well as news on how you can have effective, efficient, and affordable lighting that also helps all the birds and critters and bugs who need dark skies to be healthy too.
We'll talk with astronomers, photographers, scientists, artists, engineers, and even some of your neighbors about the stars and planets in the sky, what goes on at night in the land around us, and the world at large and the technology and innovations from around the world that are improving our lives through smart, efficient lighting. Today, we have a special guest in our studio, Brenna Marsicek, who is the Director of Outreach for the Southern Bird Alliance of Wisconsin.
Can we pause there really quick?
Whoops, my bad. The Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. And we will be discussing the fall bird migration and what you can do to help our feathered friends for a safe journey to their homes. But first, a word from our sponsor and this month's Phenology Report.
Well, today's program is sponsored by the Broad-Winged Hawks. Small, compact raptors with chunky bodies and large heads. In flight, their broad wings come to a distinct point and their tails are short and square. They've got reddish-brown heads, barred underparts, and broad black and white bands on the tail. That's the distinguishing feature for me when I see them in the field. The pale undersides of the wings are bordered in dark brown. A most attractive bird, and it's worth a second look. Broad-winged hawks form massive flocks called kettles, soaring together in circular, spiraling patterns during migration. Moving south for the winter, these birds travel from the U.S. and Canada all the way to Central and South America. Wave goodbye and wish them a safe journey as they pass on their way to a warmer climate.
The Phenology Report for September. The autumnal equinox, in which the hours of the day and night are equal, arrives on September 22nd, officially the first day of fall. Across Wisconsin, deciduous leaves change color and begin to fall. Tamarack tree needles turn yellow and will eventually fall too. Katydids, grasshoppers, crickets, and cicadas stop whining in the evening air. Birds begin migration. Watch and listen for Canada geese. White-tailed bucks rub off the velvet from their antlers to prepare for the rut. Mosquitoes begin to disappear. Hurrah! Beavers reinsulate their lodges with mud and branches and stash tasty birch and aspen branches away for winter's meal. 13-lined ground squirrels and gray squirrels fatten up for a long winter's nap by eating nuts for trees. Hawks gather in the migrating groups along the northern lake shores. Later this month, Chinook salmon start spawning runs up tributaries. Tiger salamanders migrate to winter sites like logs, the foundations of buildings, and gopher mounds. Monarch butterflies' movements peak as they travel south towards Mexico. Goodbye, safe journey. See you next year.
This is WDRT 91.9 FM in Viroqua, Wisconsin. Well, I'd like to welcome our guest, Brenna Marsicek. Did I get that?
You got it. Thank you. It's great to be here.
She's the Director of Outreach for the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Brenna began her adventure with the Alliance as a summer ecological intern in 2007 at Fayville Grove Sanctuary. Where's that?
That's just north of Lake Mills, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard of that one. The internship helped her determine her career path in nature-related nonprofit work, and it eventually led her back to the organization in 2016. She graduated from UW-Madison in 2008 with degrees in geography, environmental science, and international studies. Prior to joining the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance in her current capacity, she served as the outreach coordinator at the University of Wyoming Biodiversity Institute, where she fell in love with pollinators, shorthorned lizard, yes, birds, and open spaces. Hello, Brenna.
Hello. It's nice to see you both.
It's a pleasure to have you on our program.
You and I first met at a new organization, Lights Out Wisconsin, which is a collaboration of organizations and individuals working to reverse light pollution, saving migratory birds, fireflies, and the night skies here in Wisconsin.
Yes.
People who have been getting lights out alerts during the bird migrations, firefly season, and the aurora borealis can thank Lights Out Wisconsin.
Absolutely. It's a great group of people working together for this shared goal of,
yes,
you know, reducing light pollution and improving the night for all these creatures that benefit from it, including humans. So it's a really inspiring group to work with, and we've been seeing a lot of great response from it, haven't we?
Oh, actually, I can't talk anymore. Excuse me. Actually, you are absolutely right, and I'm a little bit prejudice towards the human element, if I must say so. And absolutely, the night, improving the dark skies and saving the night really improves the environment for us as well as all living things.
Absolutely.
Well, Brenna, let's kind of start exploring birds and migration and night by just giving us an overview of what the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance does for birds and the environment. What actually is the work you do?
Sure. So we are the local chapter of the National Audubon Society.
Oh.
So we cover about 10 counties in southern Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. we used to be called Madison Audubon until a couple of years ago. Oh. So as a chapter of National Audubon, and we're also a nationally accredited land trust, we focus our work on bird conservation and do that through three primary ways. So one is habitat restoration. So we own about 3,000 acres of land in southern Wisconsin in four different sanctuaries, and then some other smaller parcels and properties that we own throughout our chapter area. And those properties are being restored or have been restored into native habitats that benefit birds and other wildlife and the people who love them. So they're open for people to come visit and enjoy and birdwatch and hike and ski in the winter in some cases and be able to just be in nature and have access to these wide open spaces. We also work on education efforts. So we have an education department where our staff go to schools and community centers in our area of Wisconsin, which is sort of like the epicenter is around Madison, but it's much broader than that. And we share a love of nature with especially youth that haven't historically been included in the conservation movement. So our staff only work with schools and community centers where the students are 50% or more students of color or on free and or reduced lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do a lot of advocacy work. So we share alerts with our community when there's legislation that matters for birds and bird conservationists. We do a lot of community science programming that studies questions around bird conservation and get people involved in lots of different ways to be able to take conservation into their own hands and in their own yards and their own practices.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a fairly broad scope, really. I think of the Audubon Society as just birds, and yet the land conservation and everything else really kind of widens that out.
Absolutely. You know, and land conservation is such an important way to protect birds. You know, they're not making any more land. So being able to protect and restore the land that is available for bird habitat is such an important and impactful way to support bird conservation. So it is really exciting. It's kind of an unusual way to go about bird conservation, like you say, for an Audubon chapter. But we've been really lucky to have creative board members and innovative staff members to be able to sort of lay the groundwork. And then this huge collection of volunteers and members who support these efforts and help in the field and help financially with achieving these goals.
Have you heard about the Aero Ecolab?
Aero Ecolab, yes. This is something that was new to me when we first started talking about Lights Out Wisconsin. So, you know, most birders are familiar with BirdCast, which is a program that, you know, Cornell primarily runs.
Right.
And the Aero Ecolab was an interesting additional resource that people can use for tracking migration and knowing when big flushes of birds are coming through and when to be prepared for them. So, yeah, this was a new resource for me. And I think maybe you or Lisa Gomnitz with SOS Save Our Songbirds introduced it to the group.
Actually, it was me.
It was you.
It was me.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
job, Carol.
Yeah, thank you. the Aero Ecolab is just a terrific program. It really began through the University of Colorado Boulder some years ago, in which they used radar to track bird migrations. And now it is out of the University of Indiana, Purdue. And so it's an exciting program. Could you tell us a little bit about BirdCast that you mentioned? I think birders know about BirdCast, but maybe our listeners at large don't.
Sure. So BirdCast is a really fun tool to watch that it's very visually based, where it's a tool people can use to see the forecast for bird migration for the following three nights. So most of our migratory birds will migrate in the middle of the night, which is a really amazing phenomenon that I'm so tickled to think about all this movement up above our heads that we can't see in the dark of night, you know, that there's so much activity up there. I just love knowing that. So the BirdCast tool uses similar technology to how we forecast weather and can see different weather patterns coming. And they're able to use similar technology to see when big flocks of birds are moving through and estimate when they'll be moving through different parts of the country. So these maps of the country light up in different colors when there is predicted high migration levels for certain areas. And you can also sign up to get alerts for when those migration flushes happen in your area.
Those maps are fun to look at.
They are. They're very pretty. Yes.
Do you recall what are the average numbers of birds migrating at peak season over us here in Wisconsin?
I mean, it's millions.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I don't have that number off the top of my head, and I could probably
either.
Look, but it's a staggering number of millions of birds. So, and of course, fall migration after the nesting season is a heavier load of birds because there are more birds on the landscape.
Yes.
And so more of them are, you know, it's just a matter of numbers. So fall migration tends to have these really big bursts of migratory birds coming through.
Yes. And it's mostly songbirds that migrate at night, whereas the water birds migrate more during the day. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. The strategy behind that is really fascinating, right? Songbirds are smaller. They're trying to avoid predators by flying at night. And the bigger, bulkier water birds are maybe less in danger of getting plucked off by a hawk as they fly around. So, yeah, it's a very interesting way to approach movement. Especially movement in big groups.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe if you think about, you know, like the water birds, many of them are able to eat plants, et cetera, in the water. But some also are, you know, they eat other fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the fishing is good at night.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking about the bigger picture here.
Uh-huh.
And so it says, you're absolutely right. It is a fascinating, fascinating, you know, thought and topic. I've been noticing the kinds of birds that are now starting to leave us, and I no longer see the ruby-throated hummingbird. I think they must have left in August,
uh-huh.
you know, along with the orioles that they left in August. I wonder, do you know what the kinds of birds that now it's the beginning of September are starting to leave us?
Well, I suppose it depends on where you are in the state, right? It's
right.
all dependent on geography. And you living in Viroqua are so lucky to have different types of birds that live in this amazing habitat out here.
Yes.
You know, I'm from Madison, where we have more prairie habitat and big lakes. So,
yep.
you know, the types of birds that you would see here at various parts of September and beyond are pretty different. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of warblers are moving through in September,
right.
you know, those tricky birds that have changed their colors, their plumage, because they're not breeding anymore. And so they have kind of a muted plumage at this
yes.
time of year. It makes it so tricky to figure out what species you're looking
at
if you actually see
right.
them. So yeah, I mean, lots of these long distance migrants would need to be on their way out of Wisconsin in order to make it in time. Chimney swifts are another example. You know, this time of year is really when they are getting a move on in order to get all the way down to South America before they run out of food and sunlight. So.
Yeah, they're really starting to flock.
Yeah.
And we have a chimney swift science research project that we're participating in as part of citizen science. And so bi-weekly, we go around to the different chimneys here in Viroqua and count the chimney swifts that are heading into the chimneys at night.
Amazing.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is just absolutely so cool.
How many chimneys do you have that are hosting, like roosting flocks of swifts?
Four. But what's interesting is that the chimneys where they roost in the spring or and have babies in the spring, they're nesting in the spring, are not necessarily the chimneys they choose for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But we are starting to see them flock and getting ready to take off to the southern climes. You know, it's hard
mm-hmm.
to, you know, they are the snowbirds, I suppose.
That's right.
But, yeah.
So does Audubon keep track year to year of the numbers of birds in any way?
Well, national
that are migrating.
Migratory. Not necessarily the concerted effort for spring and fall migration. That's done by Audubon.
Uh-huh.
You know, National Audubon is who runs the Christmas bird mm-hmm. count program that happens
right.
in, you know, the second half of December into January. But yeah, nothing that I can think of that's large scale that would be tracking mm-hmm. birds like this during migration.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Audubon or any of these associated groups are starting to look at how they're doing during migration, because we're concerned about artificial light, which has been in the news a lot, affecting, you know, kills a lot of birds that are trying to migrate. And so I was wondering if anyone is keeping track of how that's changing in any way for the birds at night that are moving.
Yeah, wouldn't that be wonderful to know?
No,
I can't think of any studies off the top of my head that look into that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the researchers that are working at the Aero Eco Lab and related programs, you know, they are doing really incredible work on being able to forecast where these birds are going. And they're looking at it with the lens of lights out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's so much potential for research around this, you know, and I think you all shared a study with me about how chimney swifts and fox swifts
yes.
Migration has changed over a couple of decades. And I thought it was pretty interesting that, you know, with migration patterns for chimney swifts moving, you know, further away from the eastern seaboard, you know, that made me think of light pollution, wondering. I don't know if that's why. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't say that specifically, but it makes you wonder if that's one of the factors that's affecting that.
And one of the things that I was thinking of is in relation to their migration, not just chimney swifts, but all our songbirds, is we think of them going through here and going somewhere else. But really, the ones are coming from the Arctic and Canada and northern Wisconsin and Minnesota. Every night they stop somewhere and they need to feed and rest. And so all of our homes along the way, we could be very mindful of making it welcoming for them by turning out our lights and maintaining habitat for them to find something to eat. Mm-hmm. And it's not just somewhere else or a big city that they need the lights out and they need some place to rest.
Absolutely. Especially in places like the Driftless that are really critical migratory stopover habitat.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, everywhere this is important. But I completely agree with you that it's, you know, everyone everywhere doing a bit to help would go a really long way. Mm-hmm.
I wonder about what happens when birds are flying over the areas like even La Crosse or Madison that has severe light glow. I wonder what happens to them as they're flying over and trying to find the direction they need to go. Have you seen any research or have read anything recently about the misdirection to birds and how it can throw them off their migration paths?
Mm. Yeah, so this sky glow that you're talking about is, you know, a really big deal because it's something that can be seen from miles and miles away.
Yes.
You know, this light pollution that is emanating from these larger collections of buildings that have lights on or parking lots that have lights on at night. So, because birds use in part the stars and the moon to migrate and they are attracted to certain elements of the environment to be able to make that migration. That, from what I understand, that sky glow is attractive to them because of these other environmental cues that they're using. Like you think of like the glow from the moon and how confusing that would be to a bird who's relying on that in part to be able to get where it's going and then to see this glow from a different angle and, you know, while flying, trying to determine what it is or you know, how to go where, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the attractant element is a really big problem because then it brings them in closer to where all these buildings are and where all these windows are that they are, you know, really in danger of, especially in the morning when they are foraging and trying to escape from predators and not get eaten before their next night of, like, this big migratory effort. So, yeah, that sky glow element is a really troubling component to their migration.
Yeah, I would think so. When I drive into a larger city, and the ones that I particularly don't know well, I can become so overwhelmed by the amount of light that I almost feel confused trying to navigate through it. Mm-hmm. There's so much glare. It is startling in terms of the amount of distraction that it gives me.
Mm-hmm.
That I think about these, you know, little warblers, you know, flying through Chicago or through Chicago, and they, I can't imagine, you know, how they're able to do it. I find myself really struggling, and I think of myself as kind of a bright person sometimes. but, you know, think about these little birds. Man, if we could just do something to change, you know, people's dependence on light at night.
Too much light at night.
Too much light at night. You know, we have just become light indoctrinated. Susan, I think this is one of your favorite topics, is related to how much we can actually see at night and the kinds of light that's there.
Yeah, we do a lot of night walks trying to get people to see how much they can see at night without all the lights. But a question I have about the birds going through the city is there any information about birds adapting by, say, changing altitude or changing their routes to avoid that light, or do they seem to be unable to resist the sky glow problem?
So their altitude mostly depends on weather patterns and where they're going to get the most push from wind, you know. So so their altitude wouldn't really, I don't think that they would fly higher to avoid light. Yeah, so the light factor, from what I understand, is
it's kind of fixed for them.
Yes, it's sort of an innate need to follow the light, kind of, that would be based out of their, you know, million, billion year evolution to be able to navigate at night for night migration and use some of the environmental cues that they're used to.
Yeah, and with the sky glow effect, you know, it really kind of calls them, because if they're heading towards the light, to them it means dawn. And at dawn is when they go to rest and feed. And so it becomes really confusing to them. And so instead of wanting to avoid the light, it actually ends up calling them, because they don't have little wristwatches, you know, strapped to their rings or their feet that they can check to see what time it is. And so light and dark is like the clock for birds.
So does Audubon have, or Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, part of Audubon, have anything in the future they're looking at to support bird migration and mitigate some of these difficulties the birds are having? Are they looking at those kinds of programs too?
Well, our participation in the Lights Out Wisconsin effort is a big part of that. So, you know, we're working with folks like Carol and Bird City Wisconsin and SOS Save Our Songbirds and Lake Michigan Bird Observatory to be able to help people understand that if they are dependent on light, perhaps light at night, perhaps they could rethink that.
Do you have a quick contact they can go to?
LightsOutWisconsin.org is a good place to make your first stop. We also run a Bird Collision Corps community science program where people are volunteering to walk around at buildings and look for evidence that birds have hit windows as a result of their migration and being confused by reflection in the glass. So we do a lot of work around preventing collisions by putting up window treatments and advocating for ordinances that matter for bird conservation.
Great. So people, check out what she's suggesting, and we're going to have to end it here. Thank you so much.
Yes,
this
thank
has been
you
great
as well.
To visit with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. We
Absolutely.
Appreciate
My
it.
Pleasure.
Yay. I'm Carol.
And I'm Susan. That's it for today.